This week on RSVB Update, the Glacier Front chills PVM cold with its massive arch glacier. We thought Carapac was the boss for all, but this glacier is just what the doctor ordered for teaching PVM. From expert to beginner, there's drops for all, including Tier 95 weapons and more. This is RSVB Update, episode 845, recorded Thursday, September 2nd, 2021. The Glacier Front, Centistin on Ice. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSVB Update here this week. The Glacier Front has arrived, and joining me to discuss and run through all this is one of our Informer writer Bears. Welcome aboard.
Hello, nice to be back.
You're a bit of a PVMer as well. You do everything, but you also like PVM. So I thought, you know, you wanted to come on for Carapac, but we got you on for Glacier Front instead. So hopefully you have enjoyed this week, and this will provide as equally fun to discuss for you that Carapac was.
Yeah, I think it worked out really well. I'm loving this boss much more than I liked Carapac.
Good. Also joining us is Drama Free, one of our RSVB community members who is, would you say, mid-level new player to the game? You think that's a good way of describing you?
Yeah, so long-time listener, first-time talker. I am, like, I would say low to mid-level player.
Yeah.
I started in 2006.
Okay, and see, that's one thing we I have mentioned you aside from name before on the podcast of, you know, we have these discussions behind the scenes about what's the best way to cover an update, and sometimes we miss the boat and don't cover the low to mid-level range, and you're one of the few people who messaged us about this specifically on the low to mid range front and said, you know, hey, there's some things here that sometimes could be covered a bit differently. And you and I had a nice discussion earlier this year, and we decided that, you know, next time there's a good update that's tailored at this level, Ben, let's have you on the show and discuss it. And that, of course, was the Glacier Frontier. And are you enjoying this as a new PVMer?
Yes and no. So okay. I've gone back and forth on the new encounter, but I've landed on I'm really enjoying my experience.
Okay, we'll get to more of that in just a bit, of course. You guys are probably wondering where Tanis is. Tanis is off at a wedding ceremony, so he was unable to be here this week. But nonetheless, we are going to provide the full RSVB update experience on this boss. So with that being said, if you want to follow us along, we do have full show notes available at update.rsbnb.com, and we're just going to dive in here and talk about the Arch Glacier. And one of the things that surprised many people when this first arrived and we first heard about it was that the Arch Glacier was actually going to be a scalable boss with permanent free deaths on normal mode, which is something we have not done before in RS, believe it or not. And the selling point behind this is that this is a wonderful way to teach people RuneScape PVM. And that's what we're going to dive into right now. And I mean, I think I can just start this off and ask the question. Did you guys start at zero mechanics, or did you just crank it all the way up to the top?
I personally started at zero mechanics, and I got like a 47-second kill.
Oh, that's pretty good.
I was really excited. And then I toggled each mechanic on one by one to learn what they did.
How about you, Bears?
I've only done the one normal mode kill with all five mechanics.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, I had a couple friends who went in at zero mechanics, and yeah, they got it done in about 20 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love the idea behind it, though.
Yeah, and I think this is what has been needed to introduce people to PVM, aside from the specter of death costs, is that with this, you're in total control of the encounter. And one of the things that is very true about psychology, about fear and whatnot, is that the more you're in control of something, the more you're in control of an experience that might be unpleasant or new to you, the more likely you are to get through it and not be worried about it. And that's one thing that they are employing here. I don't know if that was a deliberate tactic, but it definitely works. So going through the mechanics, you can turn off the mechanics by toggling them on or off in the little bar of checkboxes that appears at the top of your screen, or you can talk to any one of the individual mages to turn them on and off. Now, one of the first mechanic that will always be on is creeping ice. Ice shards effectively move, close in from left and right on either side of you, and they force you into a specific part of the arena. You can't turn these off, and you just basically got to move out of their way. If you are hit by them, you will take a tiny bit of melee damage, not too much, but I'd imagine at higher enrages that could become quite a problem, couldn't it?
I don't know if the damage goes up, but it's more the fact that it kind of like stuns you and puts you on your butt, and then you can't move.
Yeah,
that
you got to basically restart combat with that, and you know, this is just move out of the way, no problem. Next one is Glaciite Minions, which is toggled off by talking to Ariane. The Glacier will spawn additional minions, and you can't damage the Arch Glacier until all the minions are dead. So with this, you need to, of course, use AoE damage, either through your AoE abilities, or as I have been told, if you're using ranged, use a mechanized Chinchampa.
Yep, that works pretty well. That's what most people have been doing with those.
All right.
Yeah, and then one extra with that. Once you kill the minions, at first I wasn't picking up the orbs because it would just lower a stack of a debuff. But when you pick up that orb, it actually damages the boss after you pick it up.
Yeah, it's not too big of a deal on normal, but I'd imagine that's definitely something you need to hit when you're on your hard mode streaks, I'd imagine, right, Bears?
I do it just because I mean, it doesn't deal too much damage. Okay. It's only 1,000 each, so not too much. But it's more the stacks that you're trying to clear.
Right.
Because if you get 10 of those stacks, you just get stunned, which hasn't happened to me, but I just don't want it to.
All right. Next up is the Flurry ability. This is Arianwyn. The Arch Glacier will switch between two different combat types. Magic and ranged, and the player has increased damage reduction when praying against the correct combat type, and you can tell what it is based on the color. Green is ranged, and blue is magic. And this is the mechanic that teaches prayer switching. The first mechanic taught target acquisition and changing targets. And I think this is a good way to do it, because I don't feel like you absolutely have to prayer switch, because you're not going to get penalized on normal mode that much for missing the prayer switch. I don't know how it is at higher enrages on hard mode.
When I was streaking, if I missed one prayer flick, I was probably dead.
Okay.
So it's a big part. Is there not the melee ability in normal mode?
I don't know, because I was on...
Correct. There's no... It's just between magic and range. There's no melee swipe on normal mode.
Okay, in hard mode they add a melee swipe in.
Okay, and you'll want to pray melee for that one then, I'd imagine.
Yep.
Okay. So that's all three.
If you wear the ring, you actually get an extra 10% increase.
Yeah, after it's been upgraded.
Yes.
Yeah.
After you upgrade the Pontifex Shadow Ring, I believe it is at this stage. With 1,000 resonant anima of Wen. The next one is Pillars of Ice, and this is from Akthonikos. The Glacier will force the player to move to one side of the arena and calls down the beams. The beam will follow the player around and then split into two and then a third one. On hard mode, this does damage you, and it also saps your prayer. This is perhaps the mechanic I have the most difficulty with.
Yeah, most people do. It's very deadly.
Yeah, I've been told that the best way to combat this one is to either run in effectively a figure eight format, starting from the, what side would that be? Southwest, I think? Southeast, southeast part of the arena, and then run south and then across and then effectively do a figure eight that way. Another way involves surging through the bottom part of the arena as well. How have you been avoiding that one, Bears?
I don't know directions, but if you're looking at the boss, I go to the top right corner. Yeah.
That's where it starts, top right corner, let's just say.
Yeah, and then I will blade a dive through the first one that spawns into like the bottom left corner that I can get to before the creeping ice disappears.
Right.
And then I surge through the bottom one.
Okay, that's what
I... And if I need be, I barricade too.
That's what I was... That's another thing I was doing. I was surging through some parts of it because it seems that with that you'd only take one tick, which on normal is not a big deal, but I'd imagine you can get smacked pretty hard on hard mode with that.
Yeah, I mean, I also can't melee there, so I have the Trim Masterwork Bleed that keeps me alive.
Okay, so you're using...
I do take...
So you're using melee through this entire kill. That's interesting.
I am, yes.
Okay, I'm using ranged.
I'm also using melee because as a like mid-level player, you have to invest in one playstyle. And so that's the playstyle I have right now.
Yeah, that's fair. And I don't know. You think I should give melee a try if I'm doing well with ranged?
So personally, and from what I've been told, range is easier.
Okay. Because I have full Trim Masterwork spear, so...
Okay, that's good. I don't know, I just like melee because I'm slightly better with melee, and the Vamp Scrimshaw is significantly cheaper to use than Hydrix Bolts or Onyx Bolts, which I'd feel obligated to use if I'm using range, so...
And that's a very key point here. In all my range stuff I'm doing, I'm either using Emerald Bolts or I'm using the Rubies.
Which are also great choices. Like, they're both, I don't even know. I mean, Hydrix is probably best in slot.
Of course.
And then Emerald or Rubies.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I loved doing range with the SGB, too. San Gabo. Melee is just, it's safer. It's so much slower, but it's safer.
Okay. Because of the Masterwork set effect, I'd imagine.
Actually, what else this is going to teach you, other than like situational awareness, is that after you don't make contact with an enemy for so long, your adrenaline starts to drain. And so I find that I have to start running with melee, walk up to the boss, make contact, hit him a few times, keep my adrenaline where it was, and then avoid the rest of the beams.
Okay.
Because if I just run around as melee, I lose all my adrenaline.
Right, and see, I have a different solution for that. I'm using the Persistent Rage Relic Power. That prevents that from draining. But anyways, back to mechanics. Pardon the interruption there. Next up is the Frost Cannon. This is, you talk to Charos to enable this one. And with this, the Glacier traps the player into a small area on the bridge and starts spinning around, and with that releases a huge surge of energy. And this is the attack that will kill you if you are not praying properly, or if you don't use the appropriate defensives for this, as in if you don't have protect from magic on and you get hit by this, sayonara, goodbye.
Yep. Real quickly, I have to say, this is the coolest animation for boss.
Oh yeah,
it is so sweet. I love watching it, and my first like hour or so I died to it multiple times just because I was distracted with how cool it was. I was like, that's an okay death, I'll take it.
Yeah,
that's very obvious when it's coming, and then it teaches you your very first switch for switchscape, because you can put a shield on and do resonance, which is going to give you that health back. This is how I can do this boss mid-level without any food or very little food, because when he does this attack, you gain anywhere from 5,000 to 7,000 HP back in normal
mode. With resonance, you're saying?
Yeah, but in hard mode, you're dead. Yeah. Residence does not work.
So that's what I was going to ask you, Bears. What are you using in hard mode to handle this? Because in normal mode, all I'm doing is I am using Protect from Magic and Devotion. And if Devotion's not available, I'll just Protect from Magic and Debilitate.
Yep. I mean, same idea. If I don't have Devotion, then you need to Debilitate, Reflect, and still eat food.
All right.
But usually you're fine. I just always have Devo up. Or if it's back-to-back, I'll sometimes barricade it, too.
Yeah, and you know, another good option if you don't have the adrenaline up for devotion is to use an adrenaline potion, because that gives you the 40 you need to fire off a threshold.
Yep.
Which
Vitality Pod also works, too.
What does that one do?
It doubles your HP for 6 seconds.
Oh,
so you still need to use the defensive. So
okay.
You still need to either debilitate or reflect. But
okay.
It's much safer.
Got it. That makes sense. And another fun little bit about this one is that if you are indeed not careful, and if you even just look away for 1 minute, as you said, if you're trying to just take in how it looks, you are going to get smacked by it. That has happened numerous times on my end, so I will admit to that. But the next attack is Exposed Core, which is an Ankra. The Glacier releases what's called a Frozen Core onto the map, and it puts both of its arms on the battlefield, and you need to destroy one of the arms to get yourself out, because if you don't get yourself out, you will start taking a lot of magic-based damage. And the arms are weak to either Crush or, I think, what was the other one weak to? It was weak to a magic type, I believe.
Fire spell.
Yeah. So there's a reason to use magic right there. So which of the mechanics that we've mentioned here so far do you guys find the hardest?
By far, the pillars, beams attack that follow you around. That's just sometimes so random.
Right.
I don't know. It just sometimes will feel like it's faster, or sometimes feel like it's in a different spot than it should be.
Yeah, and there's also a third beam on hard compared to normal. So
yep.
There's that. How about you, Dramafree? Which one is the hardest for you?
So in normal mode, it's going to be the ability where it spawns four adds. Because it's just really inconvenient because I can't damage the boss.
And so the Glacier one you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because on normal mode, the beams, they're very predictable. There's only two of them. So
right.
I can run to the far right corner and then I can actually damage the boss during that phase. So it's not a big deal. But the adds, they're just frustrating.
I'm actually gonna agree with you and say that that's the mechanic that bothers me the most, but that's only because I have Ricochet and Bombard. If I had used a mechanical Chinchompa, I think it wouldn't have been as difficult to fight. And those are the mechanics of the boss. They're all available to come up at any time in the fight. It is random. There's no specific rotations or DPS checks, I think, to skip, like Karapak. Like, you can skip the entire lightning phase on Karapak. I don't think you can do that here. At least I haven't heard that you can do that, right?
Right. I mean, it's... And if you kill the boss fast enough, you might not see any, but it's not... I wouldn't consider it a skip. It's just you killed it in time.
Yeah.
It's definitely not going to happen in hard mode.
Yeah, exactly. And I think with that being said, we can say that you can talk to Azanandra to enable hard mode, and that's the mechanics from the boss. And I think it says something that we were able to sum up all these mechanics just so nicely here, and that each one of them has a specific aspect of teaching people PVM, but at the same time they all add something unique to the boss, and I think that they're really well done. And that's my perspective as somebody who has just with the launch of Karapak really just started to do Reaper tasks and whatnot. So that's my take on it.
Yeah, I wish this boss would have came out before Raksha. I mean, that it would have made Raksha so much easier for everyone. Like, that was the biggest thing. No one could consistently prayer flick well enough to fight Raksha.
Right.
And now everyone's going to be able to do that. And I think it'll make it more interesting for future bosses coming out. Like, what mechanics are they going to have to make the people struggle, I guess, to fight it?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. And with that, I think we should look at hard mode, specifically the streak mechanics that are available with this one. And this is something that many people were hoping to see something like, because this streak mechanic is a lot like Telos, right?
Copy and paste.
Yeah.
From Telos. They described it as copy and paste. They said they made little adjustments. I haven't seen many adjustments they made, but I don't know behind the scenes on what sort of stuff they could have done.
Yeah, so effectively what happens is just as you fight the boss, it becomes just more and more difficult gradually. I only got my first hard mode kill because I was more focused on normal at the time. But how far have you gone, Bears?
804 in rage, and that was only on one streak. I didn't really push for it. Like, it was just, I was going until I die. So.
And how many kills was that?
71, I believe.
Okay, and you would start that at zero, or did you start it at
a
specific time?
Yes, I started at zero.
Okay. And that's actually an interesting thing about hard mode with this. When you enter hard mode, you can actually specifically type in the enrage that you want to start at.
I didn't notice that. I saw like those different options, like every 50% you could choose.
Yeah.
I didn't realize you could just type one in.
Yeah, that's what I meant. It's entirely choosable.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
What about you, Drama Free? Any desire to go for a hard mode kill in this?
So much desire.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. So I'm a millennial, right? And so I want everything handed to me. And this normal mode, I can handle. I get about 6 minute kills.
Right.
I walked into hard mode, and I got my bum handed to me. I realized I didn't have the DPS for it to get past when the two arms slam down. I can't kill that before I die from the magic damage.
Right.
So I am devoted, determined to get a hard mode kill. And I haven't wanted to do that for any other boss. So kudos to Jagex for that one.
And it's 100% solo as well. So it's not like you can bring somebody in like we did at the round table for Karapak.
Oh, no. Thaxi held my hand through the entire thing. Most of the time, he just put me over his shoulder. So that was a really great kill. I have a couple of those.
Yeah. I'm going to say I enjoyed the hard mode kill, and I don't want this to push the wrong way, Drama Free, but it honestly feels as though that the hard mode on this is about on par of normal mode Karapak, at least at the very start.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I've gone into Karapaks a few times, and I haven't learned all the mechanics of Karapaks, but just going through the abilities of the Glacier has really made me want to push and learn more switches and learn how to do what I call as assisted manual rotation.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm still just using Revolution for all this stuff.
Yeah, I've really been trying to push myself and learn, because that little hard mode box is always there and staring me at the screen to click.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a good learning experience, too, especially during Free Death Week, which we didn't mention was happening, but it is with this. Bears, are you pushing yourself anywhere else or just focusing on Glacier this week?
I told myself I was going to do regular Telos, but I haven't even considered doing it since the boss got released.
Okay. So this is pretty much just drawing you all in, then.
Yeah, I've done like an hour of woodcutting besides this boss, and that's about it.
All right, fair
Every
enough.
Every other moment has been devoted to that boss.
All right, sounds good. You know, I'm actually a bit conflicted, because I'd like to, you know, take a whack at Raksha this weekend. but I'm also perfectly content to just stay here, honestly, because it just feels like this is so much more in theme. And you know what a real fun part about this is, I find, with the boss, is that we also got the wonderful atmosphere here as well. I'm just going to have a playthrough of what some of the kill sounds like, because with this, it's once again, Jagex has hit the environment art out of the park with this. So let's just have a quick listen to this. See, it doesn't jump out at you like Carapax audio track did, but it's definitely something. And we just all also have to appreciate that the base environment for this fight is Sentistan. It's just covered with snow and ice. One thing that we are waiting on to hear from Tanis on this is how the blue behaves on the colorblind spectrum, because it feels like there's very little contrast with this, so that's definitely something we want to ask Tanis about when he is back. So, all right. Should we talk about some of the little bugs and glitches and hiccups that happened this week?
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Okay. And, you know, it's been 25 minutes and we've all focused on the wonderful combat mechanics behind the boss, but we also need to talk about some of the things that were missed with this launch, including that on launch, the manuscript pages weren't dropped, nor were the scriptures of Wen, because those are a drop, just like we have scripture of Jazz. Also, apparently the lore book is missing from the Glacers and the Glacer front. We also had some problems initially that were fixed now with hard mode streaks not being as lucrative as they were meant to be, but that was fixed, I think, on day two. Also, Troves and Resonant Anima are not dropped from hard mode, and something that's dropped on normal mode is unnoted Dragonstones at a point in the fight. So there's some things that were brought in with this fight that really could have been fixed before launch, but, you know, I think that there's always that pressure internally to hit these launch dates, but at the same time, I think most of the big ones have since been hotfixed. People are getting their scriptures, people are getting their manuscripts, and some of the other little things will probably be fixed next week. Is there anything else you guys would like to mention that specifically jumped out as you as being glitchy that needed to be adjusted or tweaked on this boss?
Definitely. Two things that happened to me were at several points in the fight, if the adds would spawn closest to the south bridge, there's four of them. So there's two next to the bridge. And there's a bunch of snow piles next to all of the columns for the bridge. Mm-hmm. Periodically, one of the adds would disappear into a snow pile, and I could not click on them. I couldn't run away. So it was very frustrating. I couldn't click them to kill them. And at times that would happen and a new phase would start and I'd have to run all the way to the right side of the map, avoid the beams. Oh, and there's the ad. It popped up. That was very frustrating. I've had that three or four times.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I found right clicking in the general area sometimes helps with that.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, I have a couple times.
That's a good idea. I haven't thought of that. I'm just so panicked when I'm fighting. Another one I had was I was doing normal mode with all of my Kanex on. I got to about 150k health on the boss. I got teleported out like I died. Mm. I did that 3 times in a row, and then I re-logged and it fixed the problem. It was just an interesting glitch.
That's very weird. Some other things that were hot fixed, hard mode common drops and Dark Nihilus in particular had their quantities increased. The third pillar of ice on hard mode now despawns correctly. And fixed occurrences of the enhanced nightmare gauntlets not triggering. Now, I also had, actually, let me just read this one first. This is posted by Mod Orion. Eliminated a rare player state where mechanics could be toggled off in hard mode.
Yeah, there was 2 day 1 bugs that really impacted hard mode streaks. One was that one where it just turned off mechanics and you could just basically do no mechanic hard mode.
Yeah.
And it was just easy kills. From what I saw, though, because I know a couple people who did it, they weren't getting any good drops. Like, they were easily getting kills, but they didn't get any uniques day one.
Okay, so it's definitely tied probably more to the mechanics than more to the mechanics than the streak for that.
Yeah, and then the other one, and this one actually came back for about 30 minutes earlier today. At 250% enrage, a fifth Glacite spawns when he adds the minions.
Right.
Or summons the minions. And if you killed that fifth one, it would just set the boss's HP to 1,000. So, like, and it was unavoidable. Like, there's no way you could kill the boss without killing that minion. So, like, I did it, and my PR is 49 seconds in hard mode. And, like, that's never going to change. And it was frustrating because I was like, I want to keep doing this boss, but there's actually no way to avoid this.
Yeah, and then your timings are all messed up and whatnot on that.
Can I take a second to talk about PRs?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, go for it.
Because I killed the boss on normal mode with nothing toggled on.
Mm-hmm.
44 seconds, correct?
Yeah.
You turn all the mechanics on, now every time your personal best is 44 seconds. Where my personal best with all 5 mechanics on is around 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I've had good fights and bad fights.
Yep.
I would like to see a difference of PRs, just like there is from normal mode to hard mode, with different abilities toggled on.
The downside of that is you have 120 combinations.
Yes. I could see it where you have all 5 on and then not all 5 on.
Yeah. Yeah. And see, that's something I think that a lot of people would like, but at the same time, we're working within a system that is designed to just have normal and hard mode kills. So I can definitely understand where you're coming from on that. One thing that really threw me on launch day, and it took me about an hour and a half to figure this out, and thank you, Drama Free, for pointing this out, I couldn't get hard mode to enable. I had killed the boss about 18, 20 times in with all 5 mechanics on, and hard mode just was not unlocking. And it turned out that the problem with that was that I needed to go back into how I set my instance up and make sure my instance size was set to 1, what it was set to 3 from last time I went to Karapak. And I just left it because I thought, oh, this is a solo boss. It'll be fine. But no, having the instance set to anything but 1 will prevent hard mode from unlocking if you have all the mechanics on. And that was something that took me, like I said, about 18 to 20 kills to figure out. But apparently it was addressed on the live stream.
Yeah, the idea behind that was all the achievements that you unlock are with it toggled with 1 player instances. So that's how they had it coded for this as well.
Okay, that makes sense.
Which, speaking of going back to the bugs, most of the achievements aren't even out yet for the boss.
Yep, that'll be in the coming weeks as well.
Yeah, I don't love that.
And now I guess the question we need to ask is, Should we have waited a week to launch this?
I would have been perfectly okay with that. Yes. As much as I love this boss, like, seeing one of my clanmates get to 500% in the first hour because he had no mechanics on, like, and I was in Discord call with him, and he was sitting there complaining about not getting drops with this. I was like, this isn't fun. Like, this shouldn't be a thing. And it was very frustrating.
Yeah, and that's what we've always said on the podcast, is that, okay, if this is happening, let's just wait and get it right. And I think it would be interesting to hear a little bit about some of the decision making that went on the idea of deciding to launch this week rather than just waiting a week for some more another pass at testing and the achievements. So
I also agree with waiting, because right now we have a lot to do in the game.
Oh yeah, Yak Track.
We've had so many amazing quests come out. Currently, we have Yak Track, which introducing a Yak Track and then a week later having a new boss come out, I am overwhelmed with what do I do to progress my account with having a limited time to play each day. Because when you do the skill and kills, if you're killing the new boss, you're not getting a very fast skill and kill credit.
No, you're not.
At all.
Unless your kills are less than 3 minutes, and then unless in that case it'll count. Because you only progress skill and kill once every 3 minutes.
So I would have loved for this boss to, one, have waited a couple of weeks. I wouldn't have been sad. Because I could have done Yak Track. I've been very excited about Yak Track, so...
Yeah. All right. And, yeah. I mean, none of the things we're talking about here are incredibly game-breaking. I think we need to make that 100% clear. Because you will always have the usual suspects who are jump up and down and say, it's broken, it's broken, it's broken. But it's entirely playable. It's just a question that, you know, we're not having that A-plus experience. We're having, if anything, a B-plus experience this week.
The only thing that was super annoying and kind of got me away from the boss was how bad the drops were in hard mode.
Yeah.
That like, I know many people who lost money.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Hard mode all day.
And, you know, the general sentiment I think seems to be is that if you're hovering around that 200% in rage mark, hard mode can be profitable. But if you're at anything less than 200%, you might as well just stick in normal mode, all mechanics.
Yep.
In terms of profitability.
That third pillar, despawning and coming back in the hard mode, that was what killed me the most day one.
Okay.
It would just like, it would disappear with the other two, and then the spawner usually was right on top of you.
All right. Fair enough.
So, those are the only two big ones.
So one thing about this boss, positive, it is the best boss introduced to RuneScape, period, in my opinion.
100%.
It has me, as a mid-level player, striving to get better, to get to those hard mode drops, whether they're better or not. It's just in a, you know, a goal-oriented game, and I want that goal. It has hardcore players that are playing multiple hours a day that do all the switch escapes, that aren't looking for loot, but looking for log collections, completions, and they're on this podcast as well. Like, this is an amazing boss. I would love to see another boss like this, and I'd like to see how low of a player could come and take on this boss.
Yeah, and that's the wonderful thing about Elder God Wars, and I think we're recapturing a lot of what we saw with God Wars 1 and God Wars 2, except adapting it to the modern player base, and people were wondering what they meant by it's going to be different. Well, here, you see that, and it's at that point I think I can move on and talk about the rewards, because we need to talk about that, because we all know that any bossing encounter would not be complete without that. And you can get everything that you want on normal mode except for the piece that makes the tier 95 weapon. So that in itself is a testament to what this boss is all about. So starting off, of course, we talked a bit about these last week. We have the Dark Ice Shard, which is a tier 85 damage and tier 85 accuracy melee main-handed sword. You'll need 2,500 Glacier Remnants, 5 Dark Nihilus, 10 Blackstone Hearts, which comes from Elite Dungeon 2, and 2 Glorious Bars. The Glacier Remnants are dropped by the boss itself and killing Glaciers on the battlefield, and the Dark Nihilus are dropped from the Arch Glacier itself. Anybody here interested in this sword?
I almost bought a set today.
All right.
To replace my Kopesh's, because with doing melee with this boss, there's so many times I use Destroy, and then the minions spawn, and I don't have Hurricane available.
Right.
So that part would be nice, but I ended up not doing
so
that.
So when you use the Dark Ice Shard in combination with its offhand, the Dark Sliver of Lang, which is the Tier 95 version, or the Dark Ice Sliver, when you wear both of these, the melee abilities Hurricane and Destroy no longer share a cooldown, which is massive, because one of the things we've always had a problem with all the melee abilities is that some of them share cooldowns across the attack and strength books. So that fixes this in this case. Granted, of course, it is Tier 85, so just keep that in mind. But once again, on the tier of Ports Armor, and I'd like to point out that this is something that isn't just dropped by random chance. It's something that you can work to, and something that you can get the bulk of it done by just killing Glaciers on the battlefield, and you only need those 5 Dark Nihilus from the Arch Glacier itself.
Yeah, I mean, I could see a lot of people using, once they settle in price and get lower than the Kopesh, I could see a lot of people buying these instead of Kopeshes.
Yeah, and this is the just run. Because of the, and this is the run people are on right now, is to gather these Glacier Remnants and Dark Nihilus. Because the components themselves are not tradable. The Nihilus or the Remnants. Now,
yeah, and what's interesting is that they said in the stream that you have to craft each individual item yourself to get credit for the completion log.
Oh.
Which is a very long decision they had over at Jagex.
Yeah, well, I mean, that makes sense. So I don't think there's a problem with that, though. I have always been advocating that bosses drop stuff that is related to their Slayer side of it. So now, as for the Tier 95 main-handed sword, which is called the Dark Shard of Lang, you need 7,500 Glacier Remnants, 10 Dark Nihilus, the Dark Ice Shard, and the Frozen Core of Lang that is only available from hard mode. Only available from hard mode on that. And I did some checking with people, and you can get this at sub 100% in Rage. David knew someone who got it on kill number one. So it's available for everybody out there.
Yeah, it is. And it's a lot of money right now.
Yes, it is. And when you make this one, it works as part of that two-piece main hand off-handed set that we talked about for Hurricane and Destroy. But it also has a special attack that costs 20% adrenaline, has a cooldown of 60 seconds, and for 30 seconds, your damage cap is increased by 30%. So this means that with melee, your max hit will become 13,000. I think it is, right?
13,000 without Grim or Smoke Cloud on, yes.
Right, okay.
Yep.
How do you feel about this?
I have a set sitting in my inventory right now that I'm waiting to perk.
Oh, so you got one?
No, I bought them.
Oh, okay.
I've not gotten a
drop.
How
much did it cost you?
$6 billion.
Wow,
that was so. Yeah, that was
take
how much
us,
I set
take
as
us, take us through the thought process here.
They look cool. They're going to be fun to use, and I had the GP. I mean, that's really what it came down to. I think they're going to be super, super good, depending. I think it's going to depend a lot on how much you actually switch weapons. So it's, in my opinion, it's going to take away the need to bring a two-handed weapon to places.
Yep.
sometimes, like for Solak, I bring a ZGS just to Hurricane a couple times. Yeah. I don't use the spec at all.
And
I use Cleave a couple times, but it's only just use Hurricane a couple times.
And the reason about this, and I forgot to mention this, with the offhanded variants of both the Tier 85 and Tier 95 weapon, the Hurricane ability can now be used when dual wielding. Normally, it's locked behind two-handed, which is, I feel like this is going to be a big deal, because I see Hurricane, when I'm using my spear or something to that effect, as being one of the best abilities to use for AoE Slayer kind of things. And the fact we can now do that with two-handed, if you're using the set, that feels really good. So, use something.
Yeah, and like,
that.
It's really good in like timed damage caps. Like Hurricane, it's better than Destroy since it deals less damage, but in less amount of time.
Yeah.
So now you'll be able to do both of them not at the same time, but like right after each other, and it'll be more damage. And I'm looking forward to that part of it more than the spec will be interesting. From what I've seen, it goes away if you switch weapons, which I was worried about. If it didn't do that, it'd be super busted. So I'm kind of glad they did it that way, but yeah, I'll know more in the next couple days.
And with this, I was talking to Thaxi about this, and he theorizes that if you use Hurricane and Destroy in a Berserk rotation, you could potentially look up to adding 20,000 damage in that rotation.
Oh yeah, definitely can.
So, you know, these are just a little bit of power creep for the melee side, but it's just advancing things in generally, I think, the right direction on this. So,
yeah, I mean, they're definitely not as busted as the Staff of Armadil was day one.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think they're in a good spot right now. We'll see in the next couple of weeks if anything gets adjusted or not. So.
All right.
I think it will come down to if there's anything, any big content creators who find a good use for it or broken use for it.
Yeah.
Well, they can't adjust it because it's part of the game, right?
Oh, they can fully adjust it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's talk about the scripture of when. This is something that is very interesting. So with these, the Scripture of Wen offers +5 prayer, +8 to all styles, and the special ability Sheer Cold. Each attack has a chance to summon an icy beam for 3.6 seconds that attacks anything standing in it. And once the targets have been hit 5 times by the beam, they will shatter for 400% ability damage. And
yeah, this is
the
good.
General sentiment is that this is about on par of the Scripture of Jazz, maybe just a little bit better in some places situationally.
Yeah, it depends on the situation. I mean, solo one monster bosses, Scripture of Jazz is probably better. Slayer, the new one is so much better because it's AoE. The new one is.
Yeah.
Nice.
From the tooltip for it, it has a 5% chance on ability hit to activate Sheer Cold, which performs 5 chip damage hits in a 3x3 centered grid on the target's starting location over 3.6 seconds. And it's the 5th chip on the target that will occur simultaneously that deals that 250 to 400% ability damage. So it's not 400 all the time, it's 250 to 400. But with that, that's still a huge number.
Yeah. I mean, I got one within the first hour of it being released, and I just held on to it. I tried it out only at the dummies in the combat arena, or combat wars retreat, that's what it is. And it hit an 8,000, which is good damage. I like it. I think it's better for people who aren't going to be hitting the damage cap with the Scripture of Jazz.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's going to be more consistent.
Which one do you like better, the Jazz or Wen Scripture?
Ooh, it's tough. I think I think, again, it depends on where I'm at. I will probably use both, depending what I'm doing. Like, I could maybe see the new one, the Wen, being better at, like, AOD, where there's minions that'll spawn in. Yeah, okay. I mean, I'm going to use them both, and I'll have fun with them.
All right. Other items that you get from the drop include... enhanced Karapak wrist wraps, tier 90 versions of it with the same effect. You need, of course, for this, 1,000 Glacier Remnants, a Leng artifact, and Karapak wrist wraps, of course. We also, of course, have the enhanced passage Gloves of Passage, which require 10 Necronium Bars, 1,000 Glacier Remnants, a Leng Artifact, and the Gloves of Passage, and they bring with this a new effect. After activating Havoc or Smash, it will successfully hit your next melee attack within 6 seconds. It will deal 10% increased damage, and the target takes 20% increased damage from bleeds for 10 seconds. I don't know where I would use that.
It seems like a switch.
Okay.
Which I...
Yay, we're switching gloves now. Or do people switch gloves? I don't know.
Not many. I'm trying to think. They're not better than Cinderbane's. So anywhere the Cinderbane's were still best in slot, Cinderbane's will stay that way. All right. Then from there, there's not many melee bosses that aren't poisonable. So...
All right.
I don't see them being used too much.
So in some cases, then, you might as well just want these if you just want tier 90 gloves, basically, is what I'm getting at, unless you don't want your Cinderbane's. Yeah. Because we also have the enhanced Nightmare gauntlets have the same effect, 1,000 Glacier Remnants, the Leng Artifact, and the existing previous Nightmare gauntlets as well. So, and... Nightmares. Oh, those are those Slayer monsters. That's interesting that they would tie it in with Slayer. That's nice, I think. Though they look to be stupidly rare, though.
Yeah, they're very popular, or they were very popular before the Snipe update.
Okay.
Not as many people use Snipe that much anymore. So, if you don't use Snipe, like I don't use Snipe at all. So these are just kind of useless to me.
It's also worth noting that the Leng artifact upgrade these is not tradable.
Yep, and I've yet to get one.
So you got to choose which gloves to upgrade and then sell the gloves if you want to do that. So we'll have to see where the value is at on that front. We also, of course, got the Glacier adornments in addition to the Gladys pet. The Glacier adornments are all craftable with Glacier remnants and varying amounts of Dark Nihilus from 2 to 5 to 10. And these look pretty neat. They're like wings, except they're wings of ice. So you can get Glacier adornment, Arch Glacier adornment, and Ur-Glacier adornment. And this just goes up and up and up.
You mentioned the pet, correct?
Yeah, I did. Gladys.
Yeah. So, that pet is so cool, too, because when it uses a special attack, it does the, laser mechanic.
Oh, okay.
So, like, one of my buddies got one within the first couple hours, and we all just sat around watching it use Ripper Demon specs.
Yeah, I like the way this pet looks. I do have to say that, and I can say that about very few pets in-game. So,
and then at 1,000 hard mode kills, if you have it, it unlocks a new skin too.
Nice.
Which is pretty cool. It's like a black chromish sort of skin.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's fancy.
They should have posted a picture of that one on the news post. That definitely would have encouraged more people to go for that.
Oh yeah. It's really nice.
All right. Let's move on to regular drop tables then, because we do need to mention that, and the reason I want to mention that, the general drop table, is that it's very lucrative as well. I'm just going to start off with the Resident Anima of when. We didn't talk about what that does after you upgrade your ring for 1,000 with 1,000 resonant anima, or maybe we did in one of the mechanics, but it enhances your protection prayers by 10% when fighting the Archglacier. And you do need to have the ring equipped, and it was also fixed this week, as many people are putting in quotation marks at Karapak, that in order to have the ring avoid Karapak's stun mechanic, you now need to be wearing the ring there as well. It was apparently a bug for all these weeks that it was working when it was in your inventory or in your bank.
Yeah, a lot of upset people about that.
Yeah, that was a very interesting thing that people thought was a normal ability.
Yeah, and you know, it just didn't feel right that you would upgrade the ring and it would unlock something account based. So,
there's other stuff like that, like the spirit cape. It can be used in your bank and its passive works. So, like, it wasn't too far of a stretch, but yeah, most people assumed it was a bug.
Yeah, but at the same time, it doesn't bother me that they fixed it, because that definitely made Karapak easier for me. But at the same time, it forces you to make a choice. Are you going to wear, say, a combat ring when you're fighting him? Or are you going to bring your Pontifex Shadow Ring and use that instead and avoid stun mechanics?
Yeah. So I know myself, I spent about 10 mil gold to get all the anima, like in the first hour or so.
Oh my god.
I thought it was just going to reduce all my, or like help my prayers. And then I found out that it's only when you equipped it. And I was like, well, there goes 10 mil gold, I guess.
No, you'll make it back. So,
yeah, I already have. So I'm not too worried about it. I'm curious if they're planning on doing something like once you add 1,000 of all four, after all four bosses get released, that maybe it can become a passive, or maybe you can put it in your tool belt or something.
Yeah.
How much people are upset about this now with Karapak.
Oh, yeah. I think that would definitely be within the realm of possibility. So
we will see.
All right. Dramafree, what do you think of the drops on this? Because I know we brought you here to talk about this from an entry level PVM perspective. And I think you're probably smiling this week.
Very, very much. Okay, so I've gone back and forth on the drop table. At first, I was wondering why it was dropping so much loot.
Me too.
Because me too.
Because let me just say this. I did two normal mode kills with no mechanics on, and I made 600K.
I had one mechanic on, and my highest drop was 700K.
Ooh.
I mean, that was crazy. And then, so through 25 or 30 kills, I've made 25 mil between buying supplies, because I don't have a 99 herbal or 120 herbal. So I'm buying the grand flasks off the auction house, and buying sharks and swordfish. And I've still profited off this boss. And when I die, anytime, there's no death cost. So there's no incentive, like, there's no big loot drop that you're going to get for, you know, the 45 mil mark. You know, you could do Barrows and get the amulet. It'll give you 38 mil. This is just going to be a consistent moneymaker. You're going to learn mechanics. When you die, it's not going to cost you anything. And so I am loving the loot drops. I'm loving the amount that this boss is progressing my account and my ability and my mechanics to get off of auto rotation. Because some of the mechanics, you can't use bleeds on them.
Yeah.
And so I don't want those to trigger. I went out and I bought a Ring of Vigor, and now I'm starting to do Switchscape with that as well. So I get that 10% adrenaline back when I use my ultimate abilities.
Amazing.
It's really the loot. Amazing. Is what's keeping me here.
Okay. Some of the things we're talking about, uncommon chance to drop Serenic Scales, common chance to drop things like Dragonstones, Hydrix Bolts, Bane Stone Spears, Crushed Nests, Crystal Keys, Water Battle Stabs, Onyx Dust, a very rare chance to drop a whole Onyx, coins are a drop, and one thing I think that was desperately needed on the drop table, because the price of these have always been sky high, is Spirit Weed Seeds. They also drop Water Talismans, the Glacier Remnants that we talked about, Summoning Focuses, and noted medium blunt Auric Alchem Salvage, which I think we're all throwing in our auto alchemizer. You also have chances to receive the Elder Troves, and of course the Resonant Anima of Wen. And if you look at hard mode, it's pretty much the same drop table, except things are just amplified in the amount that you receive, plus the chance of receiving the Frozen Core of Lang. So, overall, do you feel like this drop table is insulting you at any point, Bears?
No, okay. I mean, I loved it. With my streak, I got 71 kills in. When I finally died, my chest had 260 mil gold in it.
Okay.
Like, it was so much fun to see. It's like, there was a couple times where I'd get, I think, one kill, I got 1,000 Onyx Dust. And it was so much fun to see just, you know, 30 mil added to the gold. When I eventually died, it turned into 211. But
yeah, because you did take a penalty when you die. But
yeah, but that's still insane money. I mean, that happened over the last 2 days on and off, which that's another part I like, if you don't mind me going into a quick tangent about that.
Yeah.
Like, I was able to, you know, turn on an aura, go for 45 minutes, and then, you know, talk to someone on the phone and not have to worry about wasting my aura, because I wasn't really wasting time if I could just get back right to the same exact point I was.
Yeah.
And it took, I think, all in all, in total, it was like 7 or 8 hours for that streak. But I wasn't fighting the whole time. Like, it was 30-minute aura, and then I wasted the other 30 minutes. Or just stuff like that. And it felt refreshing to be able to get back exactly where I was and not have to worry about my auras or anything like that. Or if I, like, lost my sign of life early on, you know, I just stop doing the boss for an hour and come back to it later, because I'd rather have my sign of life. It just gives you so many more options while doing it.
All right. I want to look at the Elder Troves before we move on. Elder Trove of Wen, tier 1 and tier 2. Tier 1 version, chances of getting Royal Dragon Leather, Blood Runes, Dragon Arrowheads, Onyx, Dragonstone, Wine of Sarah-Doan, Battle Staves, Spiky Adamant Salvage, Mahogany Planks, Extreme Magic and Ranged Potions, Diamonds, Stink Shroom Spores, Manuscripts of Wen, The Flax is Back, and Dragonkin Bones. And similar to the Elder Trove of Jazz, the Tier 2 ones are just slightly improved, removing things like the Flax and increasing numbers on some of the other ones as well. I got an Onyx from one of my Elder Troves, Tier 2, so I think overall, this is a pretty good drop table. I don't have any complaints this time.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, I don't know if it was a joke or not, but I saw some people started buying Spirit Weed Seed at 3 GP each to put into their player-owned farm. So that might have gone a little too far. Again, I'm not 100% sure if that was real or not.
Yeah, that's fine. So, all right. Well, before we move on and talk about the rest of the Glacier Front, just a few little bullet points on that and your weekly God banter. I want to thank some Patreon supporters this week for making this episode possible. We got more of them this week because it's the first of the month. If you join up and you get our VIP tier at $3 a month, you get a special mention on the show at the start of the month. So this week, I would like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvids L, Brock H, Christian S, Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Plonks, Diana, Drama Free, Dura Max, Free Milk, Gila Fleur, Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Jim M., Keski, Kevin G., Logan, Lucky Ducky, Malinoric, Nate the Great, Renhonk, Ricky A., Rippeth, Samuel F.L., Scott D.S., Soupfinder, Stub Eve, Tanner J.W., The Bears O.P., The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., Vinny, and Zant. Thank you all of you for your support. It does truly mean the world to us, and I realize I got two of you guys right here right now, so thank you so much for being here, supporting the podcast, and taking part in it. But if you want to learn more about this, just check us out at patreon.com/RSBNB there. For as little as $1 a month, you can gain access to the entire back catalog of our monthly bits. We just finished recording one on Clue Scrolls and how to make money with Clue Scrolls. It's a really fun one to talk about because, you know, when you think about it, what makes money in RuneScape? Everybody will say PVM. Some people will say aspects of skilling, but there are other things as well, like Clue Scrolls, and we took a huge dive into that this month. So if that sounds like that's your cup of tea or you're already a Patreon supporter, give that a check. That'll be on the feed this weekend at patreon.com/RSBNB. And as I mentioned, we also have the VIP tier. You'll get a mention on the podcast at the start of the month and access to high-quality stereo versions of the podcast in addition to everything else. And we also do have the insider tier for $5 a month where you get early access to the clips that we use to make the clip show. And, of course, everybody takes part in helping us with the cost for funding and hosting RSBNB Update. So with that being said, thanks so much, everybody. And, you know, Tanis and I are currently working towards that Hot Ones challenge. So if you want to see us subject ourselves up to some spice, check us out at patreon.com/RSBNB. Thanks so much, everyone. You guys like spice?
No.
I have a love-hate relationship with spice because I have a geographical tongue.
Okay.
So every so often, my tongue gets these white circles on them, which means that it's a lot more spicy and I'm way more sensitive. And so when that happens, it's really fun to watch me eat spice.
Interesting. Huh. All right. Well, as I mentioned, we do have other stuff to talk about in regards to the Glacier Front. I'm going to show off the cutscene that happens when you enter the Glacier Front through the cathedral, because most of us probably went in through the PVM hub, but of course, there is also the option of entering through the cathedral.
The gods. It was no paradise, but it birthed an industrious civilization whose name is now long forgotten. When the icy comets appeared in the sky, the people of Leng had no idea what awaited them. The crashing comets wrought devastation as they landed, but something worse rose out of the craters. The incorporeal invaders formed towering suits of armor from the ice they brought with them. That same ice spread across the whole world, covering the cities and freezing their people. Their work done, the Glacors stood vigil over a silent, dead world for countless eons. When the Elder God, Wen, needed powerful servants, she found them waiting in this inhospitable place. Anathema suffused the planet and its denizens. Could she really unleash them against Gilinor, the hatchery for her precious egg? Unwilling to approach such tainted beings, she opened portals for them and turned her face from the destruction to come.
And lo and behold, there we have it. The reasoning behind why we have glaciers here at what's now known as the Glacier Front. People were thinking it was going to be the Wen Front. But, you know, Wen always has these ways. Even if it's from a frozen world of Leng, as it's been called, that can arrive here on Gilinor and cause problems for everybody at this point. So that's a bit of the backstory behind the front. What did you guys think of that cutscene? Just give me a quick rundown on that. What you thought? Let's go with you first, Dramfree.
Yeah, that was really interesting because I went through the PVM hub, and so I hadn't heard that storyline yet. That was really interesting and really fun.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see what perspective all the other gods bring as well to this, because they're all bringing something unique. Of course, the front for Jazz was tied to the Nodon Dragonkin. We think we know what Foles is going to be. Probably some things are related, but the big question is what's going to be for Bic. What do you think, Bears, of that cutscene and the just a entry to the lore behind the Glacier Front?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned in our pre-show discussion how I'm slowly starting to get into the lore a little bit more since listening to this podcast, but I still had no idea what the connection from the glaciers and when were, but you kind of get a little glimpse of it there, and it was informative, and I enjoyed that.
Yeah, it's really, really decent of what they're doing with that, and just a couple of bullet points about the rest of the Glacier Front, not the Arch Glacier itself. All of the glaciers got a graphical update. The ones, of course, on the Wen Front were the impetus for that, but also the ones, if you go to the old Glacier Cave, are also graphically updated as well. Glaciers themselves have a good drop rate for hard clues, particularly the same rate as Hellhounds, if that's something that you're looking at doing. And we actually got a new battlefield ability this week. It's from Hellweir. It's called Wrath of Nature. It summons a mushroom that will explode after a short delay. And you can talk to Hellweir on the Glacier Front if you want to pick that up and be able to use that anywhere in the Elder God Wars dungeon. So
that clue rate is huge.
It really is.
I mean, Hellhounds are so crowded.
Yeah.
And these might be easier to kill, honestly. So we'll see how much that changes things. But, I mean, now you get two options instead of one. So that's always important.
Yeah. And going back to glaciers themselves, they, of course, also have the ability to drop those boots that have been in game since 2011 as well. So I think we were definitely in need for this, another place to go and fight glaciers. So I'm pleased with what they did with this, and they just kept it nice and simple. We don't have any of those other things out there that are really just adding on to it. They just kept it with glaciers, pure and simple. It would have been nice to see another mechanic like the siege mechanics, I think, that we had on the Noden front. It's not necessarily the exact same thing, but something in the similar vein, I think, would have been nice to see. And of course, the lore book as well, which was not being dropped this week, but will be patched in soon, or should already be patched in by the time you're hearing this. So I assume you guys aren't going to go for the lore book, are you? Probably not.
If I get it by accident, I get it.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
It's strange that it's not dropped from the boss. Was this the same with Karapak? Did she not have?
Yeah, it's okay. Exactly the same with Karapak.
Okay, then yeah, I don't have that one then either.
I'm trying to figure out, I'm looking at the wiki and they don't have the list of what that is going to be, but we'll have more coverage of that next week as we get to dive a bit deeper into that. I want to talk a bit about the God Banter from this week, because this is something that we've been doing each and every week since it came out, and this week when the Glaciers appeared, Zamorak says, "That's fantastic! An Arch Glacier Ceridoman here on Gelinor." And when I read this and I looked into this, it was as though Zamorak was absolutely amazed by this creature, and you can sense that he might have had some experience with it in the past. And Ceridoman says, "No regard for the sacrifice of our troops. You disgust me. If I'd not been watching you, I think you would have had something to do with it. Alas, no. Don't think I haven't tried. Arch glaciers are impervious to pact binding, and good luck capturing one by force. No, an arch glacier goes where it wishes to, and if it's here..." Then Armadil interrupts, saying, "There can be no doubt that this is the hand of the elders. That monster makes the most powerful avian siege golems look like toys." And then Saren says what everybody has been thinking since the very beginning of this, that this battle is escalating too quickly. Armadil, once again, providing that balancing force, talking about that, you know, all is not lost. The defenders are stalwart and our fortifications but he gets interrupted by Saren, because Saren at this point, I think, is starting to feel desperate, because she says that there must be a way, something I can do to turn the tide. Armadil tells her to take heart. We have a long way to go before. And Saren interrupts again. No, I will not take heart, and you will be silent so I can think. And this makes Armadil and Saradoan be entirely quiet until Zamorak interrupts with a cough, and Lady Saren says, have something to say, only that Azanadra's mages seem to have been doing surprisingly well. Of course, that is holding back the power of the Archglacier. Their complex web of incantations make one of the most of each strengths. I'm torn between being impressed and being disappointed that none have yet keeled over. That's what Zamorak had to say about that. Saradoan says, it's a rare thing for me to agree with Zamorak, but he's right. Their ingenuity and courage has exceeded every expectation. Perhaps it is we who could stand to have a little faith. Very well, Armadil, Saren says. An optimistic outlook serves us well, if nothing else. But we must not underestimate this threat, or how much we ask of our allies. Armadil says, of course, I know the danger we face. Then Saren wraps us up for the week and says, yes. And now we must place our trust in the elves, in Azanadra, and the mages holding back the great beast, in the World Guardian. I think this is the first time that any of these, the God Banters has specifically talked about us in particular. The World Guardian, which is definitely saying something, that as this thing progresses, we're going to have more and more of an influence on this. So
that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, and you know, we get these every Sunday. This one came in with the game update, I think, because it had to be patched in with specifically mentioning the glaciers. So it'll be interesting to see what happens the following week. See if we go back to Sunday lore mentions of this or not.
I just really like these because I get a glimpse into the lore without having to go back years, you know, 20 years of history.
Yep.
And I've really taken fond to Saren through all of this, because it almost feels like they're your big brother or big sister, just like looking over you and trying just to help everybody and tell them it's going to be okay. But also, like, this is a really big deal.
Yeah. And, you know, we still don't know where Saren and Armadil sit on this. And that's something I think that we're going to learn week by week with this. So I hope that nothing too bad happens from this. But who knows? Only time will tell, as they say. And I did look it up. The lore book is not currently in the game as of yet. So there we have it. All right, we're going to move on to the patch notes right now. Couple fixes regarding Centistan archaeology. Players can no longer excavate more stained glass shards than are necessary to fully repair the cathedral windows. Uncovering Mysteries will no longer send multiple chat messages, and the ancient statue now has a chat head animation, of course. That's really interesting. The fact that you could now see that these statues have chat heads, and perhaps maybe interesting is the best word, maybe a little bit disconcerting, I guess. Have you guys gone through the Centistan lore yet?
I have not.
Okay, well, no. We will be recording Centistan lore diggers very soon, and oh, I can't imagine how that's going to come out, so definitely keep your ears open.
Looking forward to
that podcast when it arrives. Elder God Wars Dungeon, Karapax Time Clones will no longer target players that have left the boss fight. I honestly don't have words for this one. I'm wondering if it would have been dangerous if they would have left the boss fight, if they would have just got damaged somewhere randomly after leaving.
Yeah, I was wondering if they're maybe at like the gate right there at the entry, but I don't know. I wish I would have seen this.
Yeah, because I think most people would just teleport out, and unless it's, you know, just leaving through the door, then that would maybe make sense. But I think the entire area is instance, so distance probably wouldn't matter.
Yeah, I don't know.
The staff of Armadil's special attack initial hit will now deal the 50 to 200% ability damage as stated on the tooltip. All right, good to know that still wasn't working as intended. And Greater Concentrated Blast tooltip has been updated to match its live damage values. And we talked about balancing of this in the episode 2 weeks ago on that. They also balanced the Gloves of Passage this week. These come from the Magister boss fight. They say, simply put, their damage barely makes up for the fact that you have to use a lower damage ability, considering the gloves also have to compete with Cinderbane's Masterwork and the Death Touch bracelet. This has become a serious issue. To fix it, they will be upping the damage of the gloves to help them compete in solo encounters, while also giving them a helpful buff in group and extended fights. So, with the Gloves of Passage, after activating the Havoc or Smash ability and it successfully hits, your next melee attack within 6 seconds will deal 10% increased damage, up from 7%, which is minor, but I guess it helps. And finally, after the Havoc or Smash ability successful hits, the target will also take 20% increased damage from bleeds for the next 10 seconds. This does not apply in PvP. So, Bears, I have to ask, would you use Gloves of Passage anywhere, or how do you feel about these?
I think it works this way, and if it does, it's possible to use them in group content for one person to use them, because I think the bleed, all bleeds count. So if you have someone using magic, range, and melee, one person has the gloves, activates the special for more bleed damage, all the bleeds from all three styles will get a buff. If yeah. that's the case, it might be worth having one person in the group use it, and maybe I still would lean towards Cinderbane's if poisonable, but I could maybe see them usable, yeah.
All right, fair enough. And, I mean, for me, it just feels like it's just adding a little bit on top of this, and I think if you use the upgrade to bring it to Tier 90... if you wanted something melee-themed that wasn't going to be Cinderbane, I think that this makes them a decent contender behind it. But I think the last thing we want is to move into an area where we need to start worrying about glove switches.
Yeah, and there might be people who do that. I don't know. I don't love that.
No, I really don't like many switches myself. So, all right. The Sylvaria's spooky environment settings have been restored, and the confirmation button regarding leave game when closing the free membership trial pop-up that appears when first arriving in Burthorpe on mobile has been changed to continue journey for clarity. Yeah, that's a pretty big discrepancy right there. Leave game versus continue journey. So that is good. Now, there was also a patch note this week that really had the community talking about this, and we're talking about the change to the chat font face. I think we have all noticed that, correct? And I'm gonna stick my neck out on the line and ask: Did you like this chat change?
No.
Okay.
Where did my text size 13 go? 12 is too small. 14 is too big. I want my 13 back.
All right. Oh, you Bears.
No, simply because I messed with Alt 1. I don't know if Alt 1's fixed yet, but that's tough not having Alt 1.
Yeah. So what we're talking about here is that this font change that was in the patch note last week, it didn't arrive. They changed the font to something called Noto Sans, which is a true type font, which is the kind of font we all use on our computers each and every day. And the benefit of having these fonts in play, rather than what existed previously, is that these fonts are a lot more scalable in terms of the sizes that they can display, and they have a wider support for special characters. Now, the way fonts used to work in game is that they were all based off of specific glyphs. So every letter you would see was a glyph that was stored on Jagex's server, and then whenever you typed into the chat box, it would render those glyphs to put them in order of a font. And the downside of that was that it took a long time after UI scaling came out to actually get scalable chat. So presumably with this will pave the way for a wider system-wide, game-wide interface scaling option that will work better than what we currently have. Because, you know, if you turn interface scaling on currently, you still get a bit of blurriness from the chat, but we have the option to increase chat size independently. Now, I realize that it's a huge change, but I think at the end of the day, this is going to be for the better. They could have, I think, made this go over a little bit easier if they would have kept the default font size of 11. Because right now the options are, what, 10 and 12, I think? They go up every amount to 22.
Yeah, that's correct. They used to be 11, 13, 15, 17.
Right. Now it starts at 10 and then 12. So you got to choose which one. So I think if they would have kept the 11 in there and made it 11, 13 and just focused on the odd numbers instead, and also adjusted what's called the kerning of the font, which is the space in between additional letters, I think all of the questions about readability would have went away on this. And I think those are the two big problems with this, and people just don't know how to articulate that, is that it comes down to the spacing of the font and the fact that it's 1 point smaller than what everybody's used to.
Yeah, I'll be honest. So I have dyslexia, and so font is a like really big key point for me. And the fonts that they have now, it's very difficult with the sizes that they have to distinguish either spaces, characters, stuff like that. And if they want to make quality of life changes, the trade chat or the chat is great, but I would like to see them make it available to change the questing font size, because that's a default. I have to squint, really lean in, really focus to read those.
You mean on near where the chat heads appear, right?
No, so like when you're doing a quest and the quest text pops up like in a separate screen, you can't change the default quest text.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and
I would like to see that be able to change, even if it's these font sizes.
Right, and I think what the problem is overall is that, as I understand it, each user interface in-game is built manually, so it's not just a simple matter of changing fonts and chat and having it propagate throughout the entire game. Each UI would have to update with that, and sure. that's the problem as to why it's taking so long to get all these user interface fixes out the door. And I honestly think people are going to come to like this font. It's just a question of getting people used to it, maybe increasing the spacing a bit and increasing the default size by 1 point. I think those are the three things that would help roll this over. But at the end of the day, we are going to get to a phase at some point in RuneScape where we're going to have a fully scalable UI, and the chat will be able to be scalable directly with that to any font size that it needs to be. So this is more along the lines of future-proofing rather than just, you know, changing the font for the hell of it as some people thought it would be. So
I also think if they wouldn't have made it right when you enter the game, he's size 10 font. Like, if it was size 12, I don't know if I would have noticed any difference.
Yeah, it's not a sane default. So what
I think if they would have set it as 12, I would not have noticed at all.
Yeah, and one of the things you're doing when you want to build something like this is you want to try and ease your users into it the best you can, and it would have been done probably the best way by looking at the font sizes on that. So I hope that this is something that is changeable to increase it to default 11, but we'll just have to wait and see on that. So I just wanted to talk about that and explain a bit about the rationale behind it, because this is something that was pretty much misunderstood this week, and there was a lot of question what exactly was going on with this, so I just wanted to provide a bit more feedback on that. So, okay, so one more thing this week. Leonard's Lucky Dip. What a name. Leonard's Lucky Dip. This is the replacement for the September raffle.
What was the old person's name?
Balthazar's Raffle.
Yeah, I liked him.
Circus guy.
Cool.
Yep. And you can still go find that punchable clown and get a extra daily ticket if you want. You can also get your extra daily ticket by doing a daily challenge. And when you're skilling, you have a chance at finding daily challenges as well. So, what are you guys going for in the lucky dip here?
I'm not going for anything.
All right.
I put all my tickets so far into the golden God Wars Dungeon 1 armor.
Okay, fair enough.
I won subjugation the first day, so I'm excited about
lucky,
that.
lucky.
Yeah.
I'm going for golden god swords.
Okay.
Changes that they have since 2019 include being able to receive tickets when doing skills or doing combat. There's new prize categories. You can now see which rewards you've already won. You can see what your chances are of winning each prize. And as they say, to prevent unscrupulous behavior, all players must now have a total level of 250 to participate in the Lucky Dip. You can enter up to 15 times a day. You can choose what category you wish at any time, whereas previously the categories were locked at particular days. You can also now purchase a Lucky Dip reclamation service from the marketplace if you've missed any daily tickets by forgetting to talk to Leonard. The protein pack category is now called the item pack category, which includes a wider range of prizes, including dwarven tools. And all rewards from the raffle are now reclaimable in Diango, in Draenor. And when the event ends on the 30th, Leonard will stick around for a 7-day grace period, which you can learn more about below. And to get started, everybody receives 10 free tickets when they first log in at the event. And prize pools are independent and linked to the user, so there will be no more people hoarding prizes for alts and trying to squeeze people out of getting specific things. Your prize pool is your prize pool, and you're not influenced by anybody else in the world on that. So I think that's pretty good as well, because that was one of the main complaints about it.
Yeah, I still almost feel like 250 total level might be a tad low.
Yeah, it's basically level 10 in 24 additional skills plus constitution.
So when I logged in at reset on the 1st, the treasure hunter thing was celebration lamps, which I think if you just spent enough money, you could easily get 250 total level and maybe 30.
Yeah,
maybe 50.
But at this point, it doesn't matter because you're not shortchanging anyone else.
Yeah, well, so like that part of it's fine. But I mean, that's still a lot more. If everyone's, you know, people did that enough, it could be a lot of money being put into the game. So
yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a problem. I think they removed most of the pain points from this, and you know, there's a lot of question last time just how widespread the suspicious activity was and what people were doing with this.
It was real bad.
I don't think it was as bad as the community made it out to be, because if they're was we would add some kind of intervention, I think. So, but that's just my perspective on that. So, but that's what I'm going for. There's also new titles. On top of everything else, there's 5 titles, including 1st of the Lucky 5, 2nd of the Lucky 5, 3rd, 4th, and 5th of the Lucky 5. These titles will be given out at random to 5 lucky players who take part in Leonard's Lucky Dip. You get one chance for every ticket you enter in, so the more you play, the better your chances of winning one of those titles.
Yeah, for these kind of events, they're just not really appealing to me, because I'm not always going to log on every single day
right.
to do the daily.
Right.
And so, where it's mostly cosmetics, I'm not losing anything by not logging on daily.
Yeah.
And so I just don't get overwhelmed or upset about things like this.
Yeah, that's fair. I can understand that. All right. I think that wraps up the RuneScape portion of our show this week, folks. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that. We're going to move on and talk about some other things, including our picks of the week. So starting off with that, Twitter is making news again by rolling out another attempt at a paid subscription model called Super Follows that will allow people to charge people to follow them in what they're calling Super Follows. They talked a bit about it in February, and eligible accounts will be able to set the price for their Super Follow subscriptions, with the price charging either $2.99, $4.99, or $9.99 a month, they say. Wow. Yeah. Mm. And I challenge you guys, can you think of anybody on Twitter that you know who would be worthy of following for $3, $5, or $10 a month? I can think
myself,
of
myself, if you would like to follow me.
I could think of two or three people personally that could take advantage of this. But you know, most of what you find on there in this day and age is just garbage, so I don't know what this is gonna do. Paid subscribers will be marked with a super follower badge, differentiating them from unpaid followers. It'll show up in replies, elevating a follower's ability to interact directly with accounts they opt to support. And for accounts that have super follows turned on, the option will show up with a distinct button on their profile page. They're not turned on for everybody, and for now the process remains application only with a wait list, and the option lives in the modernization options in the app sidebar. Users will need to be US-based with at least 10,000 followers and 25 tweets within the last month to be eligible.
All right, I'm not eligible.
Nor are we here at RSVNB. Only available on iOS for now, and they will be coming to Android later on. And with this, it goes through the same in-app purchase system on either Google or Apple. And Twitter says they will only take a 3% cut of earnings up to the first $50,000 generated through the super following system, which they call a boon for smaller accounts. And anybody getting off the ground who uses this paid feature to supplement creator income. But after an account hits the $50,000 earning mark, Twitter will take a 20% cut.
Wow. I applaud Twitter for always trying to stay relevant. But Twitch has been doing this for how long?
Yeah, and you know, I honestly don't know about this because people could just go to Patreon or Locals or Substack and do a similar thing. I don't know of anybody who is specifically creating and gating content on Twitter. So this is just a bit of a weird one to me, and I don't know. I'd say give this a year and just like Spaces, it'll go the way of the dodo.
I agree.
So
yeah, no chance this sticks around.
All right. What do you got for pick of the week, Drama Free? I think you have an app.
Yeah, so I have an app for us this week. It's an app that I've really utilized in the last year and a half with COVID. I found myself spending a lot more time at home, like all of us have been. And I just wasn't getting out as much as I wanted to with all the gyms closed. And so my pick of the week is called Map My Run. It's from Under Armour. And the nice thing about it is it tracks your location on your map when you hit the start button. It's going to track your distance, your time, your cadence, your elevation. You can add friends. Of course, there's advertisements for Under Armour, like, you know, pedometers and shoes. But
sure.
Besides all of that, it really gives you an idea of where you're at. I'm not saying that you need to go and start running marathons. What I'm encouraging you to do is try it out. If you like it, you can pay an annual subscription, and there's coaching involved, where if you want to do a 5K, a 10K, or a marathon, it'll give you coaching to where it will tell you how many days a week to run, when to run, when to walk, how fast to run. And it's going to slowly increase those parameters to get you up to your goal. It's really just kept me honest, and I've really enjoyed having it. So it's just really been a really beneficial app in my life in the last year and a half. So that's why it's my pick of the week.
All right. And yeah. I'd imagine right. It would probably work pretty well with an Apple Watch as well, because they do see they have that version.
Yes, they do.
All right. What were you going to say, Bears?
Yeah. I used to run cross country, so I used to use this before I got a GPS watch, and I loved it. One of the features that was underrated to me is it keeps track of how many miles you put on each shoe.
Oh, really?
So, like, for example, I had two pairs of shoes that I would sometimes switch in and out depending how I felt. So this way, like, if I was using the app, I could put it, it's like, okay, I ran 10 miles, let's put them on X shoe, and the next day I ran 8 miles, put it on Y shoe, and then, like, I can know when I hit, like, the 400-mile mark, and that's when you want to change shoes.
Oh, that's kind of neat. Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. But, you know, as we say here, it's always good to be moving around, and one thing we always try to also show off is free apps, and how much of the app is 100% free, and how much is subscription? Like, do you get the bulk of the functionality for free, or do you need to take a subscription for that?
So you actually get a bulk of the app for free. All of the things that we'd want starting off, so like where you run, what your pace was, how far you ran, you know, what your splits were, so like how far each mile took you.
Right.
When you pay for it, what you're getting is your interval training, the coaching, what your elevation was, going on virtual runs with other people, things like that.
Okay, so you get the bulk of it for free then.
That's yes, pretty you good. Do. I used it for years for free, and just in the last year and a half, I paid for it.
All right.
And I actually used the money from last week's pick of the week to pay for this app.
Everybody I talk to has some experience with that, and seems I was the only one to have not known about that. So interesting. All right. Let's do some achievements. Bears, start us off.
Yeah. So we got Ellie the Wise getting 120 archaeology on the first. Cyan R getting 120 invention on the first. iBattle/ 99 herb lore. Nithras, 99 crafting. Queen Rapal, 99 ranged. Soup Eater, 99 fishing. Spyhuman, 99 ranged. Tannycat, 99 crafting. Those are all on the first. Queen Rapal again with 99 crafting, this time on the 31st. Sethi Ross, 99 attack. Tasty Romeo, 99 archaeology. I'm not going to say that name. 120 farming on the 30th. Chodo 3000, 120 archaeology. Rax Debo, 99 dungeoneering and 99 thieving on the 29th. And Tannycat, 99 mining. Congrats, everyone.
Nicely done. And continuing on the 28th, we have Crazy Legs, 722 with 99 agility and 99 summoning. Luke Totodile with 120 thieving on the 28th. Setharoth with 99 hunter. Then on the 27th, we have Tannykit with 99 farming. Uber Plastic with 99 woodcutting. Underking with 200 million defense. Crazy Legs, 722 with 99 crafting. Desmo 360 with 99 archaeology. Fritz Krieg with 99 mining. Queen RuPaul again with 99 herb lore, and River Design with 99 divination. Nicely done, everyone. All right, so what have we been up to on RS? Let's start with you, Drama Free. What you been doing this week?
I have been doing the Yak Trek. This is my first Yak Trek that I've really been invested in. It's been a lot of fun. I actually did a couple clue scrolls to get past one of the Yak Tracks, and then all the bossing. Anytime I have a free hour or so, I get on there and do the new boss.
Nice. You going to try any other bosses as well?
Actually, with the free Death Week, I want to get in and try my hand at Araxar.
Ooh, okay. That's interesting. I've actually been working on a bit as well, but I'll save that for when my turn comes up. Anything else you'd like to mention before I move on to bears?
That's great. Bears, let's hear what you've been doing.
Kind of gave it away earlier. I have done every hour of the Arch Glacier as possible. I made sure I finished Yak Track last week to make sure I wasn't worried about that.
Wow.
25% XP, right?
Yeah, it's really nice. I hadn't used skips for the last like two or three. So I just had, and I had a bond laying around. So that was, I think I had 11 skips just ready to use. So I was able to cruise up to 39 and then skip the rest of them. So that helped. Then I sold all my magic gear in anticipation for the new weapons. And then all the bossing.
Including spending $6 billion on some tier 95 melee weapons. Hopefully you see that as a good investment. We'll have to come back and check in with you on that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
All right. As for me this week, Yak Track. I think I'm on task 25 or something around that mark. Lots of focus on doing that, but I do plan on doing a good amount of bossing this weekend. Probably hard mode at the Glacier. I do want to go back to Karapak as well. But one thing I have been doing since we last spoke here at Update is that I've also been doing Reaper tasks. Been trying to do my Reaper tasks daily. I got a good Araxer task in that we did last weekend on the round table. And the next task that comes up that needs to be done is some Rex Matriarchs as well. So I'll be moving all around and doing that. But I'm actually really enjoying Reaper tasks, except for when it assigns me, something like Raksha, I guess. So that's where I'm at. But effectively, Yak Track and the new boss and bossing in general. And once again, I never thought I'd say something like this on the podcast, which I'm sure I'm flooring many people out there with. So,
yeah, that's really interesting. This month I bought the Summer Premier Club, and so I get all the goodies from the Yak Track now, which is motivating me a little bit more to do it.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. And you know, Summer Premier Club, it's a good time to buy it, but I don't think it's as good of a deal as if you buy it in the winter. But it is available if anybody wants it. So. With that being said, that wraps this episode of RSBNB Update. If you want us, you can check us out at update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, and a new one as of last week, Amazon Music we're on as well. I didn't know they had a podcast service, but lo and behold, we're on Amazon now. So if you have one of those Amazon devices, you can listen to us on that. And of course, we're also on YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. Be sure to give us a like and subscribe there, as that helps the channel out, and we might be closing in on 1,000 subscribers soon. So if you haven't subscribed yet, definitely give us a subscribe. We're past 900 and we'll probably hit 1,000 by year end. So give us a like and subscribe at youtube.com/RSBNB. And with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone. See you then.